Remember I said at the ranch that never again could you all be a victim again? But I've noticed an infinite number of I'm still a victim. What is a victim?
Somebody who's been wronged.
It's got two levels.
Yeah.
You got your useless pawn of the world, and then you've got the slimers who use that in some kind of reverse magic stuff to
manipulate.
Yeah, the manipulation one is, in psychological terms, is called passive aggression. And it's where you manipulate one or more people by either your silence or your pouting or your leaving. And its intent is, in truth, it has the appearance of victimhood, but in truth, it's really control. But let's see if we can more clearly see something about victimness. Go to Genesis chapter 1.
No, there's some Bob Cowell.
Did you get the Bible?
Oh, good one. Cancel that order,
please.
Genesis
chapter 1?
Have a Bible.
The first time that the Bible talks about man he talks about man in relationship to dominion. Let's go, it's in 126. Genesis 1:26. And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over everything that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it. And have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air, over everything that moveth upon the earth. Now, you cannot be in a state of dominion and be a victim. That's impossible.
Yeah. What's the, I mean, stupid question, what's the formal definition of dominion?
Well, and it has many facets, but one of them is that everything exists for your purpose.
I mean, I think about these horses we have out in the backyard. We're always hauling them around, moving them this way and that way, and they're a jillion times stronger than us, and yet there's somehow this subtle thing that, you know, they do what we want them to. It's kind of weird. Well, I mean, you know, they might knock you over and stuff, but I mean, the strength has nothing to do with it.
Your walk from now on has to be one of seeing dominion over everything by faith. That's really the test. That's really the dimension that Bananas is in.
By faith.
Yeah.
In other words, not trusting what our senses tell us.
Not trying to control things. Not trying to create
well,
reactions.
Well, let's talk about control a minute.
Everyone should see a chalk talk.
this is the time. I'm really glad that I don't hear tapes, because all you hear is okay. And then he says, well, up here.
Aaron, you're drawing a naked woman.
Yeah. Why started. This is the best oil I've ever saw. It's amazing in the
art.
You look at it.
In psychological terms, and this is just freshman psychology, that every person on earth has a definition of themselves in some way. The more exciting in terms of adrenal producing your work is, the more your work is your role. The less exciting your work is, the less adrenal producing, then your role comes from some other place other than your work. But like, have you ever talked to a policeman? Can you imagine talking to a policeman and saying, if you ask him what you do, he would never say, I work for the city, or I work for the police department. He would say, I am a cop. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason he does that is because that's his role is at a point of excited or intense awareness for his when he's on duty, he has to be intensely aware, and it encompasses everything about him. The adrenal glands are flowing, and so he's intense in terms of his excitement. In fact, he would rather be at work than he would rather be anywhere. And they almost always have totally disastrous, if this was some kind of a normal, and this was this intense state of excitement, and this was paranoia and boredom, then the policeman's role is here. I mean, that's where he sees himself, and everything else is bad news. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
But for most people, they don't do that. So if you asked, you know, if the same is, I mean, even with a disc jockey,
mm-hmm.
A disc jockey will never say, I work for a radio station. He will say, I'm a disc jockey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, but I'll say, I work for a bank.
You say you work for a bank, or
right.
You understand?
Right. You never say, I am a secretary.
Ooh.
Now the reason for that is, it takes a second question to find out you're a secretary.
Yeah.
Or it takes a second question to find out you're in 99% of the jobs.
Yeah.
But it's only the jobs that produce a high degree of adrenal excitement that you would say, I am a cop, or I am a disc jockey. Another one that would do it, and you can to varying degrees, I mean, obviously, most attorneys, they never say, I work for this law firm, they say, I'm an attorney.
Yeah.
The idea then is, something about that role, that job, is here. I mean, they see themselves as their role, or their job.
Yeah.
And from that, the problem is, from that, they also get their sense of self-worth.
This makes me think of
and so these are tied together intimately. So that if anything happens on their job, their sense of worth goes to nothing.
Yeah.
That's why almost every policeman is anti-management.
Mm-hmm.
Every radio disc jockey is anti-management. Anybody that says that when you ask them what they do, if they say, I am a cop, or I am a disc jockey, or I am this, then they've put themselves at risk. The reason they put themselves at risk is their sense of worth is directly related to their job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Do you understand that for a minute?
Yeah.
We're going someplace with this, trust me.
Oh, just when people, when somebody says, what are you doing? Or what are you? And when I say, I'm a stagehand, they go, oh, what? So then I got to describe, you know.
There's still a second question.
Yeah, and
you usually say stagehand or musician?
Sometimes I don't say.
If you took your life and divided it, and there's no neutral thing in your life.
Right.
That's impossible. The things that you perceive as neutral are the things that you have subconscious dominion over. You understand that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The things that you do not control in your life are the things that cause you to be a victim. Let's think about that.
How did that relate to your role and your self-worth?
Well, I'll get that.
All right.
The scriptures declare that by faith you must have dominion over all things on the face of the earth. That's the net effect of discipleship. That's the only reason you're here, is to cause you to know that all things in the universe exist for your purpose, and that you in fact, not in some theory, do in fact have dominion over everything.
So dominion and control are like, they don't have anything to do with each other for one thing, right?
So. Dominion and control have everything to do with each other.
But it's not the control that we normally think of, it's the control of knowing that everything is here for your purpose. Not the control of life.
No, but that doesn't mean control to me.
No, it extends as far as bind and loose.
Yeah, let's go to
It extends as far as what I hear.
To bind and loose.
Matthew 18.
I'm
going to
read
that right
now.
A good book. A book I recommend to you.
Y'all
have an extra Bible?
Yeah.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Just stole them.
Matthew 18, is that what you
said?
Yeah.
We're going to a hotel and get you one real quick.
Yeah, really. I love
thank
it.
Thank you, Sarah.
It's the ministry of hotel thievery.
Right. We court fitness
physical. What did you mention?
The Gideons exist, right?
Matthew 18. Verily I say unto you, verse 18, verily I say unto you, whatsoever you shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever you shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again I say unto you that if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. Now, binding and loosening are the test case of dominion. Do you understand?
No. Yeah. I understand that with dominion, but some reason control is throwing me.
Well, the reason control is throwing you is because you have considered control to be a negative thing.
Yeah. Well, definitely.
Okay. The only negative thing about control is your attempt to control yourself. If you looked at what those scriptures said that we read in Genesis, you are to have dominion over everything except yourself.
Yeah.
Wow. That wasn't mentioned.
And you just give that to God.
You understand that? Now what happens then? Remember this discussion is about dominion versus victimhood.
Yeah.
I am so fucking sick of victims in this body that it makes me retch and throw up and wrench. And it's probably the reason I wrench.
Yeah.
You are not raised. How can a high priest or a king be a victim?
By not believing that.
No, they don't.
The reason that the disciples in one generation in the first century turned the world upside down is they knew by faith that they had dominion.
Yeah.
Now, when you sit down, if you could sit down and honestly write the things that you control on one side and things that you don't control on the other side, the things that you don't control, if you have invested your identity into that,
wow.
That's where you will constantly, you'll end up being paranoid about everything.
Oh, wait, come on. This is too much data for me. Start.
Sensory overload.
Okay. Things that
if you have invested, if your role, you, okay, let's go back to
remember
the,
chart number one?
Let's go back to the cop, okay?
Okay.
If a policeman has invested his role, if his sense of worth is based on his role as a policeman, and in order to cause that adrenal rush to continue, that he always has to have more and more dangerous assignments and more out there, and all of a sudden management comes along and says, you are no longer going to be on the SWAT team, you are no longer going to be on the narc squad or the vice squad, you're going to have a desk job, then his sense of worth will go to zero because he's invested his sense of worth in things he can't control.
Right. Okay.
You understand that?
Yeah.
Now, your sense, for every one of you, you have thus far invested your sense of worth in things you can't control. That's the only reason you have become a victim. In the case of you and Jackie, a great, huge percentage of your identity is the fact that you're a husband.
A great sense of my what?
Identity, your role.
But I like avoid that like a
thing. Well, I know, but as a practical matter, it's what gives you peace. It's what gives you stability.
Being a husband?
Having Jackie.
I say,
yeah,
that's true, man.
I mean, you're a total flake before you met Jackie, before you married her. No, I'm serious. Do you understand that? Can you sense it? That a great deal of your identity is invested in the fact that Jackie is your wife.
I don't know. I mean, I've never thought of it, really.
Everybody in this room that knows you witnesses to this.
Okay.
If your identity is based on the fact that you're a husband or have a wife, then by definition, your sense of worth and well-being will require that other party to fall into the definition of what you think that role should be.
Oh.
If you don't, then your sense of self-worth will be destroyed by her actions, and therefore you're a fool.
Right. Okay.
You understand that? God is pushing us all towards a point where we have but one identity for me to live as Christ. There is no other, we've not invested our sense of worth or our role is in no other state of being other than for me to live as Christ. Under that mindset, then nothing in the universe can cause you to be a victim. And when you are a victim, you're miserable. If you are a victim, you can be victimized. Therefore, you can be manipulated.
Yeah, but it just goes on and on and on. Yes.
God doesn't want you to be victims or victimized or manipulated. Your role, if you believe these scriptures, is whatsoever you bind on earth shall, what it says in the Greek is whatsoever you bind on earth shall have already been bound in heaven. Whatsoever you loose on earth shall already have been loosed in heaven. You have total authority over everything except yourself.
That's weird. But it's not. I mean, it's just that you have this incredible power, just go ahead and call it that, over everything else except the one thing that you think that power over everything else has to spring forth from.
Right. Yeah. Now, but can you see why, if you've invested your identity in things you can't control, then you will spend your life in the state of victimhood? I.e., many of you have invested your identity in what other people think of you.
Right. Which you
You can't control that. It's stupid to try.
Which ones are the
two? That would make it worse.
So you'll live in a state of victimhood, and that will eventually... you can't just be sort of a passive victim. You end up having to be fearful, unbelieving, paranoid, because you have no faith. That's the root cause. The one statement of faith is for you to live as Christ. Now, what about this crazy business? If I have dominion over everything, why in the hell am I, why have I spent the last 6 months in total pain? Now I understand the chastening of the Lord. Let's go to Hebrews 2 and you'll understand.
Yes, sir.
Before you go to Hebrews 2, go to 1 John.
On the way to Hebrews, you cut off 1 John.
Well, they're sort of close. That's good, Rick. They're in the back of the Bible.
Yes.
1 John chapter 4.
So it's not just John, it's 1 John.
1 John. Not a John, but the other John.
Chapter 4?
Yeah.
1 John chapter 4, verse 16.
2:42 in the New
Testament. Right before Revelation.
That's your husband.
Another friendly marriage.
Did you? There is no.
Your role as a husband is just
chapter 4:16.
Why?
Sins and being a pig.
Chapter 4:16.
Chapter 4:16.
Says so indifferently.
Oh. Says it all the time.
But you gotta forget the gravy second part.
She was mine.
Okay.
Bam. I just figured out what was going on here. Okay. It said the revelation of, and I was looking at John. I was lost.
And this, remember what I said Sunday night about the elders? We are in deep shit.
I'm there now.
What?
I'm where I'm supposed to be.
And we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love. He that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. Herein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. Because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love. And what that, it's the Greek word teleos, which means perfected or tested. Tested love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. Now, another word for torment or fear, you can't be in torment or fear unless you're a victim. Fear and victimhood are hand in hand.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, do you understand the pissant things you're afraid of?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really dumb. Yeah. Where's the boldness in the day of judgment? There's fear in the day of judgment, because if the day of judgment was at that moment, then you would be among the fearful and unbelieving who would have to depart and would be in the outer darkness, wailing and gnashing teeth. So the concept of everything that we have to do with regard to the belief and the life of Christ, first of all, it's cosmic. Second of all, it demands that you constantly push the barriers. It pushes the barriers, and if there is fear found, what it says is then you are not yet tested in that arena. In other words, you haven't put yourself out to the farthest end of the spectrum so that that fear would be tested. The promise of God, in fact, the heaven and earth hang on the promise, is that he's faithful if you're tested. But you step back from it and enjoy your victimhood. Now, the key here that I want you to hear is, as he is in this world, so are we. In other words, there is an intimate identity that cannot be separated. Okay, now go to Hebrews 2.
I like 19.
He likes you too.
Huh? Well, it's so simple, but we love him because he first loved us. It's like everybody wants you to accept Jesus as your Savior and you know, I love God and all this bullshit, but until you know
That's right.
Where are we?
Hebrews 2. First John.
Put your finger
in the table. Daryl's on page 12:44.
Don't
let me
not finger in the table.
Because
if you
were
calling them, I would.
Just tell him the same thing. His wife
died. Die,
you pig.
David the talking pig. Talking gravy thing.
That's not a compliment.
I want to ask and agitate you.
For unto the angels hath he not put in subjection, verse 5, chapter 2, verse 5. For unto the angels hath he not put in subjection the world to come, whereof we speak. But one in a certain place testified, saying, What is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man that thou visitest him? Thou madest him a little lower than the angels, thou crownest him with glory and honor, didst set him over the works of thy hands, and has put all things in subjection under his feet. Okay, that's dominion. And the spirit, in fact, in all the ancient world, the idea of dominion was that you either laid your hand on it and touched it, and you had dominion over it because it didn't kill you, or if it was an opposing king, you literally put your foot on the nape of his neck. So all things are under his feet. If they're under his feet, they're under your feet. You got it? Okay, now, thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet, for in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we see not yet all things put under him. Now here's the biggest ticket that's going to cause you to have freedom. Any place that you feel that you are a victim, i.e. something that you are not in control of, something that you don't have dominion over, that's the point that your faith is tested. And it's especially true in people. I mean, you know, you can have these great philosophical discussions about, you know, inanimate objects of whether or not, but the reality of it is in the brethren, in the laying down your life. Especially true with regard to how you respond in many ways to me. If I can put you in a position of making you believe you are a victim, then your faith is gone. You have no faith. But it's especially true in the relationship of husbands and wives, in the relationships of male and female. To be a victim is impossible in dominion. Now, but it says, it warns us, we don't yet see all things put under him. But what do we see instead? We see Jesus. That's the act of faith. The act of faith declares that any time that I have any sense of being a victim. Now, I mean, herein, it's constant. You know, I'll pick on some of you. I mean, Matt has always been out of shape about something that Jackie does. Liz has always been out of shape about something that Rick does or doesn't do. Lee has always been out of shape about something everybody does or doesn't do.
It's true. Yeah.
Responses to you are. But the point of it is that where faith is tested. You understand? That is the arena that the reality of Christ has to be manifested. That's the only place that faith becomes apparent to you. Otherwise, you're just like a Gentile. Now, let's look at some of these things. If you have invested your identity in something that you do not have dominion over, that means that you, by definition, will end up in a state of paranoia, a victim. Now, where is that? If you've invested your identity in being a disc jockey, I promise you, you're going to end up totally paranoid.
I've already done that. Though, I mean, we went through that.
But you're starting it again. I mean, you're building back up the thing you already saw was destroyed.
Well, I pray that's not true.
Well, I do too. If you've invested your identity in being Rick's girlfriend, which sounds stupid, but in fact a great deal of it is that, then you can't control him. And therefore you're bound for failure.
Yeah.
If Tyra has invested her identity in being my girlfriend, well, she's really in trouble. If Harry has invested his identity in some weird, whoever knows what Harry's got to invest. I mean, he's constantly in trouble. Because he's invested his identity in something that he can't control. I just want, that's what I want you to, I mean, this all came about because of your...
Yeah, I know. Well, this is the question I have. You say investing, I mean, obviously it's like, what you don't want to do is invest your identity in something you can't control.
You don't want to invest your identity in anything other than Christ.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like, but the flip side is investing in things you can know. I mean, that's not... It's like this elusive thing, you know.
Well, it's the thing. You know, I told you before that my identity was invested in sex. I mean, that's just crazy. But a lot of men's identity is, you know, it's the Don Juan syndrome or something.
Conquest.
That's crazy.
Because eventually it fails you.
Yeah.
Sooner or later.
Dick's going to fall off.
The sad elephant.
It's the dejected elephant.
If you've, no, but can you see, when you invest your identity in things that you can't control, first of all, you're in a state of no faith, and second of all, you're stupid.
As if the first one wasn't bad enough,
yeah.
Stupid.
I heard a guy earlier today go, you know, the thing where somebody says he's armed and dangerous, he goes, armed is enough for me. He doesn't need anything else. It's true. It's like, no faith, and you're stupid. Good.
What things, I mean, am I communicating to you? Do you understand the idea of, that it's the things that you don't control in your life? If you've invested your sense of worth or identity in those things, you're doomed. Now that includes anything that's perceived with the senses. That's any male or any female, any husband or a wife, any job, whether it's appearances, whether it's anything. You know, I wished I, you know, I wished I thought of this before we've done the list heresy, and I'd ask you to.
I mean,
things you do not control and things you control.
We see Jesus, and the only thing I can just. Where are you? In Hebrews.
Where we were, Hebrews 2:8.
We don't see all things, but we see Jesus, and I think, well, what the hell is that? What am I seeing? You know, it's like.
Go to.
Yeah, I'll get another question, too.
All right.
I can understand things we don't control. I mean, that makes sense. You know, it's we're not in control of ourselves. I mean, where the connection not comes, and where we're in control of all things, but we're not in control of ourselves. That's just
Yeah, but we're not, I mean, we're not supposed to, other than knowing that we have all things, we're not really supposed to be aware that we're in control of all things, are we?
Well,
no, I'm more confused.
Whoa.
I did it for you, honey, don't worry.
Does it come under, he's put all things under him, but we don't see all that?
No.
Yeah, Jake, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I don't really getting
more confused all the time. Let's begin at the beginning. Christ said, Moses said, Abraham said, that everything in life is a pattern or a type or a parable. And all of the parables say the same thing. Jesus said, unto you it has been given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of God. But unto them that are without, all things are in parables. Now, when you see Jesus, it means that you don't literalize the parable. That you, in effect, see whatever it is, whether it's the tree or the response of somebody to you, that is all a parable to reveal another dimension of the mystery of Christ. That's what it means to see Jesus. We don't physically see the man Jesus standing there. We see that that is a parable or a mystery or it's telling us something else, and that what it's telling us is it's showing us a dimension of this mystery, this man called Jesus, Christ in you, the hope of glory. So I guarantee you this, there is no thing that once you see that it is part of that mystery that can ever cause you to be a victim. It's psychologically impossible. Yeah. Do you understand that?
Yeah. I mean, I see how that pertains especially to you do not see all things as having dominion. I mean, tying back to as he is
right.
Or we. We don't have I don't have dominion over this. This is, but in that, once you see him in that, then...
Right. Then you, in effect, have placed your hands on it. Do you understand?
What is the glass ring analogy?
The scripture says that now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now, to see through a glass darkly is the idea that if you had a piece of glass and it's got silver nitrate on the back of it, then you're seeing darkly. All you see is everything you look at, you see, how does this affect me? What can this mean for my career? How can I manipulate this woman to go to bed with me? How can I make money out of this situation? What does this mean to me? The process of life is simply the process of tearing off the silver nitrate on the back of the mirror. So that slowly but surely, it gets, there's, first of all, you just see yourself kind of dim anymore because it's all screwed up, and then finally you look through it and you see in every situation possible, you see the mystery, the parable.
So in a sense,
whether it's and that's why we are against nothing.
In a sense, then, whenever we look at something and see ourselves, it's really telling us we don't have dominion over it.
Right.
Okay.
Now, go to 1 John. Go back to 1 John again. I'll show you something. By the way, I'm reading. I've never really read the full book, but are the works. I've read excerpts. Do all of you know who Eusebius is?
No.
Good. Bunch of educated. Eusebius was the first historian of the Christian church, of the church. And he was the head of the church at Antioch. And then during the reign of Constantine, when Constantine became a believer and effectively said the whole Roman Empire was Christian, Eusebius was his buddy. He was the emperor's buddy, which is a pretty good buddy. But his job, for years and years and years, he studied all extant documents and wrote the first history of the church from the time of Christ to that time. He covered the Council of Nicaea in 325, in which a lot of the weird decisions were made with regard to the form of Christianity. I've got the complete works of Eusebius. I've been reading it. And, I mean, what I just said to you about that everything is a pattern showing the mystery of Christ was common knowledge in the first century church, up till Constantine, when the parable became literalized. In other words, the parable of Christianity itself became the state religion. That's what happened with Constantine. And from then, the Dark Ages started with Constantine. And it was as the church gained dominion, by their definition, the world suffered. All the way, it was from Constantine through Luther were the Dark Ages. Anyway, First John chapter 3. It was called the Dark Ages because primarily there wasn't really anything worthwhile done.
Because you went from the Enlightenment and the education of Roman Greece to
barbarism
of the church being the government.
Lack of history.
Yeah, that was no basically it. That was a lot of
lack of art. Yeah.
Crummy cities.
It's bad food.
Now, interestingly enough, during the Dark Ages is when, you know, in the middle of the Dark Ages began Islam, the Muslim conquering. And while Europe was in the Dark Ages, the Islam were, they were the enlightened ones, I mean. But anyway, that's... Yeah. 1 John chapter 3, behold what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons, and the word sons there is technon. It means, doesn't mean son, it's not generic, it means children, or heir, or darling infant, or that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. Now, the fundamental evangelical world sees that as an appearance in time in a singular event, i.e. the second coming. We see it as when he shall appear, i.e. when he is revealed in you, then you shall be like him, for you shall see him as he is. And you see him as he is by seeing him in all possible situations and scenarios. You see the mystery, the parable, in every situation you can be in. That's what the definition of obedience is. The word obedience in both the Greek and the Hebrew means something totally different than it does in English. It means to hear under. To hear under, no matter what situation you find yourself in, you hear. What do you hear? You hear that, bottom line is what you hear that I am in exactly the place that I should be at this moment. I'm content because he is in control. Now, the thing God hates worse than anything is rebellion. Rebellion against what? Rebellion against not seeing. Remember? You're structured. The human race is structured. In fact, it's structured like this in the womb. So that in the womb, the first organ, or the first sensory organ that is developed, is the hearing. Second one is the sight. Even though it's... But we are structured as organisms so that whatsoever you hear is what you will see. And what you will see is what you will do. That's why the whole mystery of faith versus works, because they don't understand that, so they say, well, I gotta go out and make converts because faith without works is dead. Well, that's not what he means by that. He means that the automatic of first hearing and then seeing is doing without any effort on your part. Now, we're back, we got to get back to, let's go to Hebrews 4.
And another thing about chapter 3, 2, you know.
Not Hebrews 4, Hebrews 12, I'm sorry.
We know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. I mean, that doesn't say process at all. All it says is just a recognition of what is.
Amen.
Hebrews.
Okay, Hebrews chapter 12.
No, just before I think we're running through it.
Verse 3. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. Now, I've told you so often that the battlefield is in your mind. It's nowhere else. And if you quit in your mind, that's what it means to faint in your minds, is to quit, then you, while you're in the midst of something, have left to a more pleasant arena or your own imaginations to create something. You go in debt for something that'll happen in the future so you don't have to face the misery or the chastisement of the moment. And you do that in your minds, and that's what it means to faint in your minds. Well, that means that everything in the universe was against him. Everything in this universe is against you. That's
so being a victim is quitting in your mind.
Yes, that's perfect. You have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. The only sin here is unbelief. And this manifested by seeing at that moment or believing that this isn't of him. You understand that? All right. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If you endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with legitimate children, is what it says. For what son is he whom the father chasteneth not? But if you be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are you bastards and not sons. Now, it sounds contradictory because it says if you're without chastisement, of whom all are partakers. Well, what that means is if you run from the chastisement of that moment, and in your mind or externally, create in your mind a scenario that's pleasing to you instead of the one that you're in. If you lean on your own arm of understanding to change your circumstances, then you are a bastard. You're an illegitimate child and not a son.
Getting your ass kicked is really good. Getting your ass kicked is really good.
Right, so there is no condition that you can be in, none, that you perceive as negative, that isn't there as the chastening of the Lord. So if you are in a position which you will perceive as negative, you will automatically think of yourself as a victim until you see it's the chastening of the son or the child. Then you're molded, you rest in it, and you're like Christ, who said in the garden, he said, Father, my soul is troubled. The Son of Man, he said it. He bubbled forth. I don't like this. What shall I say? Deliver me from this hour? No, for this hour came I unto the world. It doesn't matter what circumstance you're in. Anything you're in that you perceive as negative is the chastening of the Father, and your response to it is, as Son of Man or as with the flesh, you say, I hate this. Then you say, what shall I say? Deliver me from it? To deliver you from it by your own understanding, because God's not going to deliver you from it until you've seen. To deliver it by your own act of you as God, figuring out how to get out of the situation, it means you are not enduring chastisement. You're an illegitimate child. You understand that?
Yeah.
If you can capture this, the life will be far more simple, and you will stop ever again being a victim.
I mean, you know, we've been talking about the radio, but that's what I do in my head all the time. I mean, I wasn't doing it, you know, we're doing bad. I don't want to think we're doing bad. I don't want to think this is not working. I don't want to, that those thoughts are just, I mean, even though I know that's the reality, okay, I'm thinking, well, in the spring, we won't. You know what I mean? You, like you said, you take your mind and go put it in a more pleasant place, and it's a lie. I mean, but I'm...
I've never seen
it. I confess that and I'm going to move on. You know?
Leaning on your own understanding is the same. It's that's what changing, that's what going to a pleasant position in your mind is.
Right. And it's the proof of illegitimacy.
Yeah.
Well, no one wants to hear that.
And that's the battle thing.
Well... But again, that's what the whole parable of the prodigal son is about. I mean, well, that's all we've done up to this point is we've run out in the world trying to, we've leaned on our own mind of understanding every time we got, you know, something negative happened. And it's, and well, we've ended up eating in the, you know, pigsty. Now God wants us to step up to the banquet table and eat fully. Okay, let's continue on here. If you be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are you bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence or respect. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure. Now that's the biggie. I mean, all a parent can do is chasten his child for his own benefit. Mm-hmm. You understand? There's not a parent in the world that chastens the child for the child's benefit. They think they are, but they're really doing it so they won't suffer the persecutions of having a weird kid.
This hurts me more than it hurts you.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure it does.
So what do we make
of these? But he, for they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure. But he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous.
Okay.
I mean, you hate it. You're dumb if you don't hate it. No chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore lift up the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but rather let it be healed.
That's neat.
Now, you've got to have noticed by now that this relationship between the senses really is true. That what you hear is what you will see. I mean, you've seen it happen too many times.
It's the only reason we're here.
That's right. What you hear is what you will see. What you see is what you will do. Without the stupidity of the compulsions. I mean, you got to find out finally that if you're gonna take one law, you can live by one law, that one do or don't, but you have to live by all of them. That's stupid. When grace is flowing. But the bottom line of tonight is, it's time that you stopped ever again. Never again can you be a victim with impunity.
What does that mean?
That means that you may still be dumb and come in here and say something and peg yourself.
With impunity means without fear of getting your ass kicked.
Upside your head. Sure.
That
puny,
you be puny.
Well,
what you're saying is
you be punitized.
Yeah. Oh, you mean you say you're a victim? You're gonna get your ass kicked, so you might as well.
You might as well see right away.
I know I'm a victim, but.
I'm kidding.
But this is different.
Yeah.
I know I shouldn't be a victim, but.
You don't understand my situation.
Nobody says that. I've heard anybody say that in a long time.
Yeah. It ceased to fly years ago.
You just don't use those words anymore.
But it's a... I mean, you don't yet see all things put under subjection. We see Jesus. That's the biggie. You have to see. You have to ask And that's the wisdom. That's when it says, if you any of you lack wisdom, let him pray for it, and the Lord will give it to you liberally. The wisdom. What? Wisdom. Wisdom is the act of seeing the mystery in all things. There is nothing, I don't care if it's the worst music or the worst movie or the worst sunset or the mountain or the tree or the worst the mystery is to be seen in all things. That's what it means to see him. And then once you, I've had it happen too many thousands of times. Something that truly destroyed me, I'd see the mystery in it, and all of a sudden, it's gone. I mean, the thing, once you see it's from God, then the purpose of the chastisement is instantly over. What?
So see it fast.
What?
See it fast.
Which word for that? See it fast.
Turn quickly.
Everybody understand perfectly? You don't want to be a victim anymore.
Think of all the conversations I've had with you. You know, they'd seem fairly innocuous at first, and then you would totally change the conversation. Like, you know, just talking about the weather, you'd talk about how the humidity was like the judgment in the air. It's like, I don't see that.
This seems sticky to me.
A lot of judgment in the air.
Not the judgment, it's the stupidity.
Is that your friend? Is that your friend?
Yeah, she's an elder. Yeah.
I don't feel like talking anymore. Anybody have anything else?
Take Vika.
What?
Take Vika.